Welcome to the Nahrain Network podcast series. Today we're with Professor Nasser Jassim from Mosul University. Professor Nasser Jassim is a British Institute for the Study of Iraq and Nahrain Network scholar, and you're based here at UCL.
Thank you very much, and nice to meet you, nice to be here today. And I'm glad we will talk about this scholarship.
You've just come for the second leg of your scholarship. You arrived a few days ago, and you were here for a month before. So up to now, and you have another 10 days left of your scholarship.
In fact, I concentrate all my life career to study the British Orientalism. And I study, then I teach and write and administrating works on British Orientalism, but I didn't get a chance to be in Britain and meet in person the British Orientalist all over this. So the scholarship was a long life. To be in here in Britain is a long life dream for me, and this scholarship fulfilled that dream. When I'm here in Britain, I find a contradiction in defining Orientalism, because this word has related to the most famous book in this field is that Edward Said. Orientalism and its relation to the social sciences is a very difficult topic, because there is a traditions of those interested in the Middle East and the Oriental area and Africa, and this tradition belonged to a period of the European history, and this period is related, as you know, with colonialism and with the hegemony on the East, and also related to the missionary works. Also, there is educational aspect and the intellectual aspects in the East by painting and by poets. Discovering the Orient had its many purposes. You discover it by escorting the military army, or also going to Orient to make a missionary work, or you go to the Orient to write a novel. So Orientalism is different. There is many Orientalisms, and not just one. All related to its own goals and purposes.
And the concept,
yes,
as you've described it, emerged before Edward Said's work.
Of course. The word Orientalism belonged to the 18th century. It was just a romancing idea toward the East, and it's dominated by painting and music, not by historical works. Although there is those interested in or wrote works on the East. You know, the Lodian chair in Oxford belonged to the 1636, and the chair of Thomas Adams in Cambridge belonged to 1632. But they don't call those Orientalists, they call Arabists. The word Orientalism in the beginning means those who are interested in, there is a way of looking to the East.
Edward Said depicted a very particular way of looking at the Middle East, which he called Orientalism. So how does that differ from what came before his work?
Before Edward Said, there is a criticism of Orientalism. And let's say Anwar Abdul Malik in 1963 wrote a penetrating article about the criticism of Orientalism in the Western world. Also, there is Abdul Latif al-Tibawi. He was a British Palestinian scholar who wrote a critic for Orientalism and publish it. But Edward Said, in my mind, he get this fame not through handling this topic, but through the methods that he adopted in handling the topics. He was specialized in literary criticism and the theory criticism, and he handled this topic from this point of a view. And that's what makes him different than Anwar Abdul Malik and Abdul Latif al-Tibawi. In the Arab world, the criticism of Orientalism belonged to a century or more ago. And as I said in the lecture I delivered here, the criticism of Orientalism take three main trends. The Islam religious criticism, and the socialist criticism, and the nationalist criticism. Orientalism identified with the West or the Western hegemony, So it was criticized through those three main trends. My scholarship is about a project. I am intending to write a dictionary for the British Orientalist or the British scholars who are interested in the Iraq history and civilization. And it did not just related to the scholars, it related to all British persons who devoted works related to the Iraq. It's mean have a written material or painting or music or any kind of...
In relation to Iraq specifically?
Just relation to Iraq. It's a dictionary for the British person who wrote and given articles.
And what are we looking at in terms of the period?
I even included those who interested in archaeology, and I didn't confide it with a limited period. It's up to now.
So what you mean by dictionary is also your profiling, you're creating profiles of important individuals who have written about Iraq.
From the ancient, those who are interested in archaeology and travelers in the 18th century and before that, you know, there is a literature related to Iraq prior to 1920. There is a book by Zaki Saleh called Britain and Iraq down to 1916.
I mean, what kind of criteria are you using to identify the specific researcher you're looking at or the writer?
The specification is related to the output. As the output related to Iraq and in Iraq or the area relating to Iraq, it's included in my dictionary. Archaeology, social
heritage,
sciences, economic, and everything related to Iraq.
But specifically who are British?
Yes, of course. It wasn't a British person or individual. In the beginning, it was the project is not just related to Britain, it's related to the Western Orientalists first. And then it's not related to Iraq specifically. The initial tips of the project is related to the Middle East area or the Arabic and Islamic area. You know, there is a book in Arabic called Al-Mustashriqun by Najib Al-Aqiqi. He was very enduring work of three volumes, and the author spent more than 40 years editing and revising his book. The first idea is to translate the book into English. It didn't translate it into English before, and many English, even specialists in Middle Eastern studies, have no idea about this book from Lebanon, but his resident was in Egypt. A high official member in the Arab League issued many editions of this book, did it all with his own effort. And this book was a rare in its importance because all those who write about Orientalism in the Arab world depended mainly on his. And there is no original contribution in study Orientalism can overcome this book. All are, as it is said, all are rise from the quote of Najib Al-Aqiqi, not Google.
Mm.
In the beginning, I decided to translate the book into English. And then I found the additional materials. He wrote his books before internet and before the available materials through periodicals and databases and something like that. Now there is the material he gave it in regard to the actual. There is a multiplying numbers of those who he didn't include it in his book. Also, he ended his book in 70s and something like that. My intention is to supplement this work down to the present day.
And your book would be both in English and Arabic?
Yes. I decided to write it in Arabic and then I translate it into English. Or I do the two books, two version in the same time. Because I sometimes don't need to translate material.
And you was a previous, but you're still part of a...
Yes.
Associated with a unit of study. Could you tell us more about the history of this unit?
Yes.
Which is part of the University of Mosul.
The study of Orientalism and Mosul University had its good traditions because the founders of the humanities in this university have their degree in UK universities, and when they established in the humanities departments, they give us a well-balanced view toward the British Orientalists, especially those who are supervising their theses and works. We made an infrastructure for handling or understanding the Orientalism, and we built about it. we managing to add studying PhD and MA thesis about Orientalism, especially about the British Orientalism. The main contribution work is the establishing of a special unit related to study of Orientalism.
The only one in Iraq or the other?
No, it's the only one in the Arab world, in the whole Arab world.
It looks at Orientalism, but it is tied to a university in the Middle East.
Yes. We don't concentrate on the Orientalism with a proud meaning is related to India and China and something like that. We concentrated only on the Middle East area.
And when was it established?
It was established in 2011. Or we did good works in that regard. But at that time, Mosul was, as you know, was at the eve of invaded by Daesh, and there is a kidnapping and killing and something like that. So we have to make many of our efforts. And in a private works, we published a periodical translating articles. We made in interviews with specialists in Middle Eastern studies and through video broadcasting. And all that is not in, we didn't make it public because of even the word istishraq, dangerous on our safety.
You lived in Mosul under the occupation of ISIS. Where were you when Daesh, the Islamic State, occupied Mosul?
I was in Mosul. I didn't have an intention to evacuate my city. In fact, as I said, once I decided to, the Daesh entered Mosul and the majority of Mosulis evacuated in hurry to for the night that Daesh entered the Mosul.
This is June 2014.
Yes. In June 5 or 9, June in 2014, and 9, in the night of 9, 2014, and I go out with hundreds of thousands of people who are evacuating in hurry from Daesh occupation in that night. We spent nearly 9 hours just to cross a distance more, no more than 3 kilometers to enter the Kurdistan and to get...
So you left immediately as...
Yes, and as far as I crossed this and back to my house, because I, in my mind, I remembered the Palestinian who left their houses.
So did you cross over to Iraqi Kurdistan?
Yes, I crossed to Iraqi Kurdistan. Just I reached the Kurdistan, I turned back and I said, I don't want to be a Palestinian or the French immigrant evacuating during the French Revolution at the intention to back 2 months or three to their homes with the invading.
So you were with your family?
Yes,
your wife.
And my wife and my sons were crying, why you back
us? And
you
all went back to Mosul?
Yes, I told them
you're
that.
You're probably the only one going back.
Of course, I am the only one who going back. Because the way to go to Kurdistan was very crowded, and the way to enter back, I even afraid that the border will cross between us and it's denied for me to back to my home. So I hurried in the car just to reach my home, because as I told you, I thought of Palestinian who evacuating their houses
and taking never returning.
Yes, and taking their keys with them, and they believe that it's only 1 month or two and they will be back to those homes. You remember Mahmoud Darwish's famous poem about why you left the horse alone. So this idea was in my mind, so I back to Mosul.
And your family was happy with you?
My family was crying, and they don't understand why I did, why I'm doing that. And I told them, I took the full responsibility for back to...
And your colleagues from the university, were they also leaving to Kurdistan, or some of them stayed on? Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yes. As I said, many majority of Mosulis evacuated this night from Mosul. Some of them preferred to stay in Kurdistan and never back. And the
border was open of Kurdistan.
Yes.
You could enter.
Yes, but Kurdistan's border was closed in that time. And many of them spent 2 days or three in a free area until they permitted them to enter. But the majority of them decided to back, as I did before, to back to Mosul and see what will happen. We believed that it's this occupation was very temporary and wouldn't last months, and the Daesh will evacuate and leave the city, because it's insane to understand that just a few militants who can controlling this city, the central government will reback the city from the occupation.
So when you came back, to Mosul, what did you do?
You know, that was in summer, and there is no university at that time. I spent nearly 2 months.
The university was closed.
The university was closed through summer, and when we back to the university in August, they told us there is a new administration of the university by Daeshi teachers. We discovered few of our colleagues became a part of attending the Daeshi administration.
So some of the university lecturers, teachers became part of Daesh?
Yes, of course. Mm. But those who are very, very, very few, and they are not prominent scholars or something like that. They're only just a handful of MA graduate, they still didn't finish their MA, but they have the responsibility. They have the high ranking in the new establishment. So they instruct us, under a threat of death, to back to the university and teaching students. But there is no students in the university, so they bring us to the central library, at the pretext of editing a new curricula for the university and for secondary schools and the primary schools.
Yes. It becomes a concentration camp in a way.
Yes, of course. And I think it is one of the main reasons that it was targeting the central library in the liberation operations. The central library became a host for university scholars. They, as I said, they was enforced to be there to write a curriculum for the whole grades, not just
the curriculum is obviously the work that was asked of you and other colleagues. It was obviously associated with Daesh's own ideology, understanding of Islam, politics. What was the kind of program they wanted the university teachers to prepare?
Yeah, it's not related to the Daesh. It's deals with all specialization, physics, medicines, something like that.
So it was about revising.
Yes, revising it according to Daeshi principles.
Okay.
If there is a picture, they cutting the head of the picture. If there is, if you're their account, better than to choose one apple, two apple. They said one bullet, two bullet, three bullets, and something like that. Also, I said it's not just related to university or undergraduate curriculum. It's related to secondary schools and primary schools.
What about history? What did they, particularly, say, for instance, the British history in Iraq, colonization, occupation? What about European history? What about American history? What did they ask you? What did they ask university teachers to do? Did they just blank slate?
In fact, it's as I may say, it is just a project, but it didn't fruit nothing. They bring us and make us editing text and give us instruction to do that and doing that not. As the result is zero. There's nothing written or nothing editing from all those. We see they are photocopying books and banding them and going them and something like that. But just like a show. It's no more than a show.
And during this time, obviously, there is no
teaching
for istishraq. There's no.
No.
This is closed.
No. The unit was closed during.
The president of the university also he had fled.
Yes.
The whole
administration.
Kurdistan.
The whole administrations, administrator in the university, fled, the deans and the.
So were you not scared for your life when you went back to?
Yes, of
course. And all the other colleagues who went back and who stayed on, in Mosul, and what kind of environment were you living in? I mean, you were going back and forth between the university and your house, but otherwise, you didn't do anything beyond that. It was very restricted. Your mobility was restricted. What you could say was restricted. Could you tell us about general life under Daesh when you were there?
In Mosul.
In Mosul, yeah.
Yes. it was various stages. First stages was a peaceful period for nearly three months or more, that the people feel relief, because before Daesh occupation, there is two things. There is very restriction from the military in Mosul, and also there is a bombing and kidnapping and assassination by Daesh. So after the Daesh occupation, there is no assassinations and no military restrictions.
So there's relative calm.
And some people believe that it's all arranged with the government, or all arranged with the foreign powers.
So this is rumor and hearsay.
They even believe that the Ba'ath was to regain its control of the city as a beginning to recontrolling the Iraq and back to the life between before 2003, and everything will be stable and we will get rid from this kidnapping and killing and assassination.
Security, yeah.
And back to our usual life before 2003. But with time, there is a gradual presence of a new brutal rule. With they take it step by step. Firstly, they evacuating the Christians and their assaults against the Yazidis. For the Mosulis was really astonished from this, because they don't ever imagine that this kind of things happened in Mosul. As you know, that Christian and Muslim lived together for hundreds of years, and they believe there is a coexistence that inseparable part of the Mosul. And with the day or two, you see this happening.
But did Daesh attack the Christian community in Mosul?
And not attacking them. They ordered them to evacuate and give
their houses.
So they evacuate the houses and their properties and left and take nothing with them outside the city. Even their cars. When they getting out by their own cars,
there was no physical attacks on Christians.
No physical, no killing or no arresting. They just let them get out of the city.
And this was because they were Christian, as opposed to Yazidis.
Yes, of course.
Who were seen as outcasts from the three main religions.
Yes, of course.
And this is why Yazidis were attacked.
The Yazidi as heretics.
What was the Yazidi community like in Mosul itself, in the city of Mosul itself, prior to 2014?
In fact, there was a Yazidi presence in Mosul, but as May said, until 2006 or 2007, there is a kidnapping or killing the Yazidis. So all of them evacuate the city and live back to outside Mosul, go to Sinjar and the Bahshiqa and other
safe areas.
There is no Yazidi in Mosul 2014. Even the students from the when they came to Mosul, some of them was kidnapping and killing, so they preferred to change their teaching to Kurdistan universities, other universities.
So, with the liberation of Mosul in 2017,
yes,
you at the very end of Daesh's rule of Mosul, you left.
Yes,
you left Mosul.
No, I did.
Oh, you stayed.
I stayed in Mosul, and I saw the liberation operation. And
so you never left.
No.
Okay.
I didn't left Mosul ever.
Well, you're very brave.
No, you know those who live in Mosul. They have a deep relation to the city, and they didn't find themselves elsewhere. But when you left the city, and as those who left the city in 2014, many of them get used with the new life in Kurdistan and Turkey and others, and they didn't think that they did the fact of bagging to Mosul. Everybody love his own birthplace, and during Daesh time, we thinking of evacuating the city, but that was very dangerous project. And many of those who going out of Mosul, they may killed or...
So it's also a risk to leave.
The university managed to recover from this black times and to reinitiate its...
The university was heavily damaged.
Some of its buildings are heavily damaged. If we want us to talk about what happened in the university, there is two things. There is Daesh managing to burning some of the colleges. And also the American or the airplane strikes destroy some of the buildings, especially the central library of the university, and it destroyed it. Daesh also burning, as I said, because I was in the university just 2 days before its liberation, after its liberation, and I saw barrels of gasoline and...
Where were they?
In the front of the colleges.
All of the colleges?
I came across the College of Arts, College of Education, College of Ed.
And these barrels were designed to burn?
To burn, and they are burning some of the, they say, College of Education was burned by Daeshi fighters before the for the liberation of the university, College of Arts. I have pictures, I can send you pictures about my, what I'm photoing just 2 days after liberation of Mosul University.
The university eventually was able to come back to its rather relative normality. So by 2000, and liberation happened 2017.
Yes.
So by within a few months, university life was coming back.
In the beginning, we go to Alhamdaniya, the outskirts of Mosul, and commencing there and make an examination for the students for nearly 2 months or three. And then in that time, nothing is done in the Mosul main campuses. But after that, we are decided those by our own efforts to cleaning the university with our students and those workers in the university to make life back again. And then the main administrator of the university stay in Kurdistan and come and back sporadically.
You mean the president of the university?
The president, the chancellor. And the deans of the university. Also, many head of the departments.
Under Daesh's rule, were there any lecturers who were killed?
Yes.
Lecturers or teachers?
Yes.
Who were deliberately killed, executed by Daesh?
Yes, yes. Those, even in our department, in history department, our two or three of our scholars was killed by Daesh. The crime that they are participating in the elections or nominating themselves to through the election and something like that. One of our colleagues, his son was in the media department, and he took a photo for a burning Daeshi car. He was accused and executed because of that.
Because he took a photo, they thought he was a spy.
Yes, they thought he was transmitting this to military forces. He was only a second grade in the media department, and he thought it's just his work as a as you know in this department, and there are others in the other departments, and there are also some of the scholars died through. Bombing of the liberation, the dean of the ex-dean of the engineering college was died through the liberation, and he and his wife, the dean of the computer college.
2017, those who had fled, coming back now.
Yes.
And the university was temporarily relocated in The Hague and other places. Could you tell us about that process?
During Daesh regime, the university commencing its work in Kurdistan regime and also in Kirkuk in the north, and they are administrating the university, and they are gathering the students who are out of Mosul. And they
this is where in Kurdistan? Where, in
Duhok and in Erbil and in Kirkuk.
So there were three temporary campuses.
Yes, for the university through the help of the Kurdistan University and University of Kirkuk.
And this is for students who had left.
Yes,
who had left Mosul.
Who succeeded in leaving Mosul and staying outside it. There are, you know, the students of Mosul University is not belong to the Mosul itself. There are many students who was already from other governorates. And also there is a Mosulese students who fled from Mosul at the time of the day of occupation 8 and the following months. And they start just commencing their studies. You know, there is those who are in the four. Grade.
And who are the teachers in these three temporary? Were they the same teachers?
Yes, they are the teach. There was the teachers of the Mosul University, but as you know, when they evacuating Mosul, some of them settled in Duhok and others settled in Erbil and others in Sulaymaniyya. So the campuses related to the main settling of the university scholars.
So it was like a makeshift university,
Temporary university. But I succeeded in you know, graduating the students and also those who need to defending their thesis and dissertations.
Did these close down now? Have they closed down?
Yes, it's all closed with time, not just with the liberation and reconnaissance. There is some belongings to related to the old or to the previous campuses, but now they are resolved. But as I said, some of the university teachers and others, they still live in Kurdistan and came in the early morning to Mosul University and back at the end of the time. But the university now in full capacity to recommence its work. And
now it's back to normal life.
Yes, it's back to normal life. There are money spent by United Nations and other organizations to happily live in the university. And as you know, the postgraduate works are on in advance, and the university, especially with its new presidency, or look forward for a new era of its work.
Let's go back to the unit that you were speaking about for Istishraq. And were you able to rebuild the capacity of Istishraq after the liberation of Mosul in 2017?
In fact, we are just want to recommence in our work, but there is an administrative obstacles. Because we have to address an application once again to the president of the university to have his acceptance to recommence in our work. Our old building was destroyed and burned, and we need a new place to gather. Also, the equipment related to the unit was also destroyed, the computers and photocopying machines and something like that. So there is in the beginning there is an obstacles, administrative obstacles, and there is a need to refurnish equipment. But as the online contacts and the online material, we started just from the first day of liberation. We recommencing our contacts with those specialists in the Middle Eastern studies. There is a page on Facebook. We provided it with the new materials and something like that. And also, there is a students who have their degree on Oriental Studies. They are starting to finishing their thesis and defending on it, even just before the re-establish of the unit. And within years or more or less, the unit started its work officially, but now it's taken its few steps, and I'm sure this scholarship will give much back to the unit for its work, and I have very promising prospects for this unit to recommencing its work. And I may add it that between 2011 and 2014, we didn't work with the full capacity owing to the situation, and we are declining many projects related to the unit because we are afraid from make this in public, as I said before.
Through this scholarship, you're strengthening the capacity of unit of Istishraq. And you're, and the unit of Istishraq is part of the history department?
It's part of the... It's an independent department in the College of Art.
Okay.
But there is no teaching on it. It's only a research unit, but it's an independent department, and there is an affiliated scholars or teachers from all over, from all the departments of the College of Arts.
And you said it was the only one in the Middle East, but if we look at Iraq specifically, what other departments examine Orientalism in Iraq? Is it just this unit, or is it also part of the curricula of other universities?
The first initiative in study Orientalism, or say it, teaching Orientalism, is belonging to those scholars who have their own degrees in Western world and back, and they're initiating the interest in Orientalism. And with time, it's been a curriculum in the postgraduate studies in the Department of History, Department of English Literature, and Department of Arabic also. The main issue for the British audience, that there is a difference between the departments or the scientific departments in Iraq and the Arab countries on those UK universities or the Western universities. There is a department of history related to the ancient history, medieval history, and modern history, and not just restricted to Iraqi or the Arab history. And there is a department of Arabic studies related to the language, Arabic language and Arabic literature. And also there is a translation department. And those departments are interested in Orientalism, as I said, through the experience of their teachers there with the Western education. Within years, it's became a curriculum in the undergraduate, in the fourth grade of the undergraduate, to study Orientalism. But the first, let's say, postgraduate thesis about Orientalism is by 1992 by me, is about Saladin English-speaking biographers. And then the other universities are interested in this field, and there is a thesis in Baghdad University and in Kirkuk University.
It has these links with other universities.
Yes, they keep consulting us about their works. They want a new subject. The supervisor contacting us about materials, something.
Do you have any other connections? Do you have connections with universities, research centers outside Iraq, in the Middle East itself?
As regards the Orientalism, there is no independent center concentrate on the study of Orientalism all over the Arabic world. There was a center in Saudi Arabia, Muhammad bin Saud University. It's called the Center for Orientalism and Civilization. And this was closed long ago.
Why is that the case? Why is it the case that we don't have these, what should be quite important centers of research, particularly given the history of this region?
Something related to the ability to find those who are efficient to study it, study Orientalism or study Western studies actively. And also, you know, the language obstacles. And also the most important thing is that there is a preoccupation related to Orientalism. And if you want to study Orientalism, you have to be an apologist or a polemical. You have to say something about Orientalism, an accepted point of view. There is no ability to challenging this long existed view toward Orientalism. So if you want to study this topic, you have to attack Orientalism and defending your religious doctrine and defending your national identity and something like that. It is the purpose of studying Orientalism. This point, the other point, that the available materials in the Arab world was very, very scanty, because it's all dependent on translation works, and the process of translation works by Orientalists is very limited. There is a concentration on translating novels, a book of sciences, and something like that. And the interest of studying Orientalism or in translating book by Orientalists is very short.
Just on that point, how do people in Iraq look at this concept? Edward Said wrote about Orientalism with a view to a Western audience. How do Iraqi scholars use Edward Said? Do they still use him? Do they still think he's important? And I also would like to ask you, is how does that inform Iraqi scholarship?
As regards Edward Said, his book has great fame, not in the Western world, and there is an echoes in the Arab world. As I said in a lecture yesterday, the translation of the book by Deep was an obstacle to really understand the book and the message of the book. As I said, the book is a difficult book, but the translation make it more difficult to comprehend. But this people celebrating Edward Said and celebrating his attitude and celebrating his fame in the Arab world, because they put it in, you know, in defending the East against the West and against colonialism, and they saw the book in this perspective. And also the method by Edward Said was very advanced in regard the Arabic readers, and they found in it a way to upgrading their handling with the Western materials. Those who misconception the message of the book, and they are welcoming the book, although they don't have the actual message of it, and those who are welcoming the book, and they are just aware of its message and reinterpreting. As we're talking about the responses, there is a varied responses. There are responses by those scholars who have their degree in the West, and some of them are welcoming the book, and some of them, they say that Edward Said know nothing about Orientalism, because he was a graduate of English department, not of if he was a graduate of history department, and work with in contact with Orientalists, he will surely give us a different point of view. He concentrate on the novels and the writers, and he didn't handle the actual achievements of the British or the Western Orientalism. He also excluded the German Orientalism, as you know, and he defended on that and said it's German Orientalism have nothing relation with the colonialism and something like that, because Germany had no history in colonialism and something like that. The book was so influenced, but in my mind, there is other Arabian origin scholars who spent much time in the Western world and write about Orientalism, but they don't get the same recognition from the Western world. And also this because of he was efficient, the media need a person who well qualified for the how he contact audiences. Sometimes you find a great scholars who have no access to media. Edward Said, and also he struggled for a long time in his controversy against Bernard Lewis and other scholars or from the right or the conservative scholars. And this controversy and this polemical give much fame and let people to stay beside him. Also, there is a Palestinian, his Palestinian background, as he said in his autobiography, he said all the immigrants have their own originals, their countries, and they can speak in the name of it, and I have no countries to back to it because now Palestine was occupied by Israeli government, new peoples, and a new government. This give his ideas more credit. He also well educated in Western humanities. He play music, well qualified in literature and painting, and this kind of qualification are rare in the Arab world. He was a Western scholar in the Arabian name, and he defend his case properly and find many who stand beside
him. Where do you see the future of studies that look at Orientalism? You spent some time now in the UK. You've been to the School of Oriental and African Studies, which is one of the main venues for your research. And of course here at UCL, at University College London. And you've met with Iraqi, non-Iraqi British scholars. You've given some talks yesterday at SOAS and in a few days in Oxford, I believe. Could you tell us about the scholarship that you've seen, particularly from your perspective, an Iraqi perspective, a Muslawi perspective regarding Orientalism?
Of course, there is different between what you hear and what you see. When I be here in Britain, many of my all the perspective are modified according to the actual experiment and personal contacts. I have my own contacts with a British specialist in Middle Eastern studies before, but not like you see in them and you enter the rooms of the classes and attending events and something like that. The main issue that there are much difference what our perspective in studying Orientalism and the development now happening in the study, because there is, as you know, there is an interdisciplinary subjects. There is a social sciences. You can talk about social scientists and development studies and political studies. There are two links. The first link is the area. Now, those who studied economic by concentrating on Iraq, they have links with the old tradition of Orientalism because of the uniqueness of the place. And also there is a language. The other link that related us with the old conception of Orientalism is the language. And I see through my experiment here, even there is the interest in Orient on the languages or in Indian languages was backwarded in regard to the interest in social sciences. I even saw many scholars who have their degree on related to Iraq or to Syria or other areas and are not well qualified in the languages of the area. And I'm wondering how they can make an actual comprehension of the history of Iraq and the area without reading the original material in its original languages. And also I saw interest in colloquial language, Arabic colloquial, better than interest in Al-Fusha. And when I asked, they said it's a practical importance for teaching those colloquials. But in my mind, you need to go to and read the original materials. And all the original materials are written in the Arabic Fusha. You cannot ignoring the importance of studying language when you decided to study the social and the economic or even the economic situation in this area. There is, as I said, there is less importance on the language and the languages of the area
than before. Yeah.
And there is interest in social sciences. There is more interest in current issues than interest in the...
Because in the Middle East, we have quite strict disciplines.
Yes, of course.
You're taught in a discipline and there is a sort of general lack of interdisciplinary research.
Yes, yes,
and this
of course.
Is one of the problems people find in the Middle East.
As I told you, I faced new things are very new to our curriculum in the Middle East, because as I said, there is a history department related to history alone and have nothing to do with other disciplinaries. And also there is an Arabic studies, a tradition of studying Arabic and language without have the chance to go to other...
But what is the impact of that on Iraqi scholarship? That way of looking at these disciplines on the caliber, on the quality of scholarship in Iraq today?
I think they are repeating themselves, and they give us giving nothing new. They just stick with the old traditions belonging to the 70s or the 60s, and we are needing a new revolution in studying as regard the history department, which I belong to. We need a new technique, a new method. There is something missing there. And he was very stressed on is the practical consequence of the practical, for the study, the practical aspect of the study. You can make a joint study between two or three topics or two or three specialization to edit or to get on a project that will satisfy the needs belonging to the needs of Western institution or something like that. There is nothing comparable in the let's say in the history department on the Arabic. They don't have the need to satisfy an institution or certain institution related to our works. We just submitting thesis, and if we can talk about postgraduate, the new minister of education. Managing to find solution for all that, what I call its laxity in higher studies.
This is a really important issue, particularly in terms of not just Iraq, but Middle East Academy, right? It's really about how do we learn from each other areas and disciplines that are borders are very being strictly defined.
Yes.
This is the main issue. The Middle East doesn't have that cross-communication between different disciplines, which is one of the reasons why we don't have this kind of creativity that you're talking about, or yes. There's this sense of things being reproduced over and over and over again because of this lack of absence of communication. But it's not just about communication, obviously. This is about ways in which knowledge is produced.
You know, it's multi-aspects of problem. It's related with the qualifications of a scholar who can invite this. It's related also with the organizations that can back the research in this regard. I saw in the Western world there is many organizations or institutions that can give the aid to researcher to build multi-talents. In Iraq, there is if you want to work on interdisciplinary work, you have to do it by your own. If you want to, there is no those who can bag you in this regard. You will work by yourself. So also, there is the teaching. There is a restricted curriculum that you couldn't have additional. You couldn't get additional material. You couldn't attend courses, let's say courses related to Turkish language. If you are studied Ottoman studies, you need an Ottoman language. So you have two choices, either to depend only on Arabic materials or English materials. And this is not accepted from the scientific point of view because the majority of the materials related to the Ottoman history are in the Ottoman language and the Turkish, modern Turkish. But how can you get this qualification? You may go to a translator who translate the documents for you, and it is also unscientific way because the translator is not specialized in history, and he will translate something different that you are intended to have. And the second thing that you need to attending courses in Turkish language, but there is no courses in the Muslim university. There is no extra courses for the special purposes. There is only a department of Turkish studies. If you can attend this department and spent 4 years to have a degree in Turkish studies, and this not have nothing to do with your own work on history.
What we need are obviously more studies about this and research in the Middle East. And
if we want to make a contact between us and and the Western universities, and to help to upgrading our curriculum and something like that, we have to communicate between each other, and we have to understand the needs of each other. And because, as I said in an address in LSE, the American ignoring the needs of the Iraqi universities and try to enforce their own conception during after 2003, and the result was they failed in upgrading the levels of study in the Mosul universities owing to their ununderstanding of the needs. So I think the unit of Istishraq as regard to humanities can make a link between the Western universities and the colleges of humanities and the departments of humanities to make a reconnecting between both. Also, as you know, the Western universities needs to contact with the, let's say, Iraqi universities, because there is a department, well-established department in the Arabic studies and even in the history of Iraq and something like that, and they can give aid. I even think of a temporary, I told the president of the university about an idea of held the temporary courses for 2 weeks or three for PhD students in the British University in the Department of Arabic Studies or in the Department of History. They can enrich their capacity in certain field, and they can make a contact, personal contact with the as I did in the vice versa.
What are the key outcomes of this scholarship for you?
In fact, it's a long-awaited opportunity for me. And I am really, as I said, I spent much time reading and writing and administrating work about British, let's say, Middle Eastern studies. But I didn't get a chance to be here. I wrote about SAWAS and Oxford, but I wrote it through written materials. Being here in UK, I spent much time in the British Library, in the British Museum, in the Library of SAWAS, and in the Library of UCL and other libraries. I met people, I met scholars specialized in Middle Eastern studies and the Arabic history. For a long time, I read their books, but I didn't get a chance to be in contact, personal contact with them. Professor Hugh Kennedy, Professor Gerald Houghton, I attending lectures in the Royal Asiatic Society. All was much important for me because I knew it only through written materials, and now I see it face to face. I maybe modified some of my attitudes toward Oriental studies. I also built links for the future between those specialized scholars, specialized in the Middle Eastern studies, and between the Mosul University and the unit of Istishraq and the College of Arts. And I believe that these links will give a fruition or give much aid to help. At the personal, I'm editing a dictionary. Being here give me much aid for not available material here there in Iraq. And there is a new material added. I talked to people about this project, and they promised to help Central Library. It was destroyed.
But it had it before, prior to 2000.
I gathered as much material as I can, but still there is a material. I have not in mind to write this dictionary in that time. There is an obstacle of traveling between governorates. There is a restrictions in regard to accessing the libraries in Baghdad or in Basra or something like that. In those days, I think it's better. The situation is much better than it was before 2014, even. Because since 2005, you know, the sectarian conflict and something like that, it's restricting our availability to traveling through Iraq. And also, it's hard for us to have new books online, and as there, here can I go everywhere and have books and periodicals through free access that I provided by UCL through the months that I spent it here. In Iraq, we had free access to JSTOR and other periodical databases, but this free access was denied now owing to financial problems, and this prevents us from going to the real materials related to the Oriental studies and something like that. It is an essential for us to have this. The other things, I think it's an important issue, that the project of the dictionary is not restricted to those who live in, let's say, down to the Second World War. And its aim is to include the living specialist in Middle Eastern studies, and this need a personal contact with those specialists and have a clear idea about their works. And being here in Britain was a great opportunity for me to doing that. What I intended to say, that I don't want our relation ended with the end of the scholarship. I thought this scholarship is just an initiating step for a full cooperation with the unit of Istishraq, or with the College of Art, or the University of Mosul, and the Western institutions and the Western scholars. If the scholarship related to months or 2 months I spent it in UK and I'll back to Iraq and cut my links with the institution that funding my scholarship, I think there is no good investment in this regard. Those institutions, let's see, the BC and the UCL and Ashmolean and other institutions need to strengthen its contacts with the Mosul University, as I said, exchanging scholars and exchanging materials. In the unit of Istishraq, we are preparing to issue a peer-reviewed periodical related to the Middle Eastern studies, and we are welcoming participation of Western scholars in this periodical. We are welcoming scholars attending lecturing to Mosul audience there, or through Skype, or through the BC or CAN UCL or any related institution, arranging contacts between us and Western scholars. And I think it's the main benefit from this kind of scholarships is how we built on it, and not just the scholar itself. The most important issue that many of those who work on all their degrees on Iraqi studies, as an example, they don't think it's essential to go to Iraq, and they believe they can have their degree without need to be in Iraq and spending much time there. The archaeologists and those who they think it's essential for them to be in Iraq, but also interested in social studies and the let's say in political studies, something like that, they believe it's enough for them to consult the libraries and meet even the Iraqi person who live in UK and something like that. But I advise them it's better for them to go to Iraq, and we can arrange suitable condition for them to be in Mosul and to have a field study there. I can mention that the American University of Sulaymaniyah get used from their presence in Iraq to make a field studies, or to publish a field study works about political situation and about the elections and something like that, very important. But I think that SOAS and other institutions who interested in or were specialized in Iraq studies, they didn't have this access. Why not? There is a British school to study in the university. Why there is a center, and much aid to unit of Istishraq to be a host for those British scholars who are, or even a British researcher who have their degree on Iraq and the Middle East, and they can host them there and help them in their needs. It's not, as I said, it's a matter not related only with books. It's related with contacts with people and the understanding things.
On that note, Professor Nasser Jassim, it's been a pleasure speaking with you, and I'm very delighted that you've benefited from your scholarship here at UCL.
Pleasure is mine. I am very grateful to those who participate and enable me to be here in Britain, especially the BC and those wonderful team, Professor Eleanor and Dr. Mihar and others who give me, as I said, long life opportunity to be here in UK and to develop my prospects in regard to scholarship, and surely that I back to Iraq with the new ideas and new projects for my students and my colleagues. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.